Welcome back. We are waiting. There's a guy I want to talk to very badly, Jerry Leekas, who is the author of Where the Tour Buses Don't Go. Jerry, if you're out there, we're trying to call. We're trying to call. Any of the Leekas family who's out there, we are trying to call you because there are, I don't know, I'd say something in the neighborhood of, 10,000 guidebooks to Chicago, and this one that he has written is one of the most interesting. We got him. We got him. Put him on the air. Maybe we fouled up at this time. I'm always screwing up. I think I'm dyslexic. Jerry, it is so nice to talk to you. How are you?
Hi, Rick. Thank you very much for having me on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I was just saying that there are, you'd probably know this too. There are probably 8,000 guidebooks to Chicago. You seem to have read most of them. Yours is among the most interesting because you make the point, the subtitle of the book is Chicago's Hidden Sites of the Mysterious, Macabre, Ghostly, and Glamorous. And you make no bones about it. You say that you are not writing a book for the normal people that read these books. What's the seed of this book? You've had a fascinating career, but before that, what compelled you to write this book? You obviously know a great deal about, maybe it's because you grew up on the Northwest Side and went to Lane Tech. I don't know. You obviously have a real affection for Chicago and its history.
Well, thank you. First of all, I'm really shocked that somehow I wound up in the company of a bunch of distinguished authors tonight.
Wait a minute.
I'm just a neighborhood guy.
Well, that's the way I think of myself, too. My neighborhood was Old Town. What was your neighborhood growing up?
My neighborhood was Belmont Central, the gritty underbelly of the genteel. I found when I was growing up that where other guys were sitting next to me scanning the baseball stats, I was checking out the police blotters. So, and I was always attuned, always had my ears open to the rumors in the neighborhood. Because you'd hear the most fantastic things. But there was always some germ of truth, this guy is connected. And
of course,
This happened over here. And, I just became fascinated with the more unusual side of Chicago.
You hear a lot of those stories. You hear a lot of those stories, as I did as a kid, at the neighborhood tavern. What were you doing there as a kid? Would your parents drag you over and say, sit in the corner and be quiet?
No, my mother would usually send me to bring my father home.
It's the opposite with me. But that was a real source of hearing those stories. And they sort of got under your skin then, right?
They did, because, sometimes if it wasn't true, it should have been true.
Exactly. I want to get into the book, because I'm going to write about it, too. If those of you who get Tuesday's Chicago Tribune will find a story about the book. But also, you've had a fascinating career. Where'd you go to college?
Well, I enlisted in the National Guard, and when I came out, like probably half of Chicago, I was at Wright Junior College.
Sure.
My wife called me the Prince of Wright Junior College.
My father went to Wright, man.
I went off to Northern for just a little bit, then actually I'd gone into the Guard. When I came back, I finished at Northeastern. So I was kind of like the Cesar Chavez, I guess, of college students.
And did you get immediately, I know you had a lengthy career as a teacher of social studies and literary arts. Did you start, was that your career from the time you got out of college?
Yes, I taught, and then I really left teaching for about 15 years, finally returned to teaching, and it was while I was actually teaching. One of my subjects was social studies to junior high students, and I found junior high students don't really care about history.
Yeah, I know,
that's
so sad.
Because everything to them is 20 minutes old.
Yeah. So
to kind of draw them in out of left field into history, I started just relating
stories,
what I knew from the neighborhoods around them and from the areas around them. Because, the easiest way is to sneak up on them and make them learn without really, or involve them in the learning process without even realizing it's happening. You break down the resistance.
Well, that informs your book, too. I love it. Near the end of the book, or I can't remember where it is in the book, you say something about I'm not going to tell you every single thing about the Blues Brothers movie or something. But if you want to know more, there are places where you can find it, and you lead them to different places. And you don't, God love you, Jerry Lucas, for writing this one sentence. There are many good ones in here, but this is one of my favorites. No, we're not going to talk about Resurrection Mary. That's a sentence that should be in every Chicago.
You know, if you really explore it, you find that there's Resurrection Marys all across the country.
Of course,
just has that ring of the the urban legend. So
yeah.
I didn't really want to go to every place that everyone knows about. That I wanted to, I'd taken some of the tours.
Sure.
And I always found that mysteriously they all went to sites that were conveniently located around the tourist hotels in the Loop. So they would all go to the same places. We'd hop off the bus for the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, which is just an open little...
Oh, I know it well, man. I know
right.
it well.
And then we'd hop back on the bus, and I was left, like, wanting more. So I said, the trick was, it's how many people have a warped enough mind
right.
to be interested in the same stuff that I am, And the only way to really find that out is to write something like this, throw it out there, and see, if it...
I'm quite taking the book. As I said at the beginning of the show, I don't know if you were listening, that there are probably 8,000 guidebooks to Chicago, and yours is among the most distinctive I have ever read. I can hear your voice in it. After reading the whole book, I get a sense of who you are, and I do get a sense that you're a Chicago guy. And here you also write about those tours that go to ghost sites and this and blah, 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 and let you out in, air-conditioned bus.
You say, right.
Here,
well, thank you very much.
Along with a very brief visit to the sites, you were treated to a ton of corny jokes. I went on that gangster tour that they used to do, and
right.
it was one. I mean, they had costumes, and I'm like, wait a minute. This, and then John Dillinger, go look at a light pole in an alley.
Jerry, and they tell you it's haunted, too.
Yeah, of course. We got to take a short little break. We'll be back in a couple minutes. I'm very glad to talk to you. What did you do for the 15 years when you left teaching? Where were you?
I'd have to kill you if I told you that. No, I actually was in business for a while. I was a terrible businessman. And I found, actually, that my real talents, however modest they might be, lay in talking to sixth graders.
That's great. Hey, man, don't kid. You know it better than I do. That's a very important talent. It really is. We'll be back in a couple minutes with Jerry Lucas to talk more about his book that can be available anywhere books are available, Where the Tour Buses Don't Go. We'll be right back. In Jerry Lucas's fascinating new book, Where the Tour Buses Don't Go, which joins a crowd of, as I said before, 800 guidebooks, but it is very distinctive in the way he writes and some of the places he tells you about. You don't hear much about the Reed Dunning Memorial Park in ordinary books. You don't ordinary or cliche-ridden tour books. You don't often find Jack Ruby's grave. You don't often hear the whole compelling story of Helen Brock or Andrew Cunanan or Ed Gein or those two charming weirdos, Patty Colombo and Laurie Dan. How long did it take you to do this book, Jerry?
It's funny. One of your other guests had mentioned the swooping and bashing styles of writing.
Yes.
And from my whole life, every time, even a fifth grade composition, I was a basher. I'd stare at it and change it and mess around with it until what I came out with was utter horrible stuff.
Yeah.
And then I'd throw up my hands and walk away. With this book, I actually evolved somehow into a swooper. And I think it's because all these years of things crammed in my ears and all the neighborhood talk that I knew the basic stories.
Right.
So for me, it was just sort of backtracking and actually having to nail down exact addresses.
Well, you did. One of the other nice things about the book is you did a lot of research and you cite a lot of places and you recommend other websites. I mean, it's you're a sort of giving kind of author. You're not this... holier than thou, know everything. And I think that is a huge, huge bonus for the book. You have a real creative side. I mean, I know that you wrote a song that was in that Ron Howard movie. How does that happen? How did that happen?
I had a publisher, a music publisher, that was so old, he sold Sophie Tucker a song.
Oh, my God.
And most
your
people listening to the show,
you said your father?
Don't know.
This was your father?
Pardon me?
No. Oh, no.
This guy could have been my great-grandfather.
Oh, okay.
But he heard that Ron Howard was looking for a song for the film, and he submitted mine. And, you know, it's better to be lucky than good in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
And Ron Howard chose mine. And so it's just a little conversation piece for me. And I still get royalty checks from
the
movie.
How much?
Oh, my God. The biggest I ever got in a year was about $750.
That's not bad.
The least I ever got in a year was about $60.
That's not bad. That's not bad.
Well,
you also, I know you were on this stage. You were on with Bob Collins. You know how I know this? I know from your book, because you talk about Bob Collins in here, and that you were on his show talking about a game that you had developed.
I had developed a game called Rock and Roll Trivia. And Bob Collins was very, you know, heavily into rock and roll.
Oh, yeah.
And he was kind enough to have me on his show, where I had the first chance to make a fool out of myself on the radio.
You're not doing that now, man. You're good. You're good. You're good.
Well, you know, one of the ways I really wanted to write the book is I didn't want to write it, number one, in a ponderous way where I'm acting like I know everything and you don't.
Right.
I threw out things. I threw out my own conjectures. And I said, you know, I can't prove this. This is what I think. But,
right.
You know, here it is.
Well,
I even give one ghost story that I have. I'm, like, psychically challenged. I mean, ghosts, either they're afraid of me or I'm just so sick that I can't pick anything up. But, you know, for years of wandering through graveyards, most of the time I never get anything. And I had one little, my own ghost story with my wife up in Richmond, Illinois, which is up near the Wisconsin border. So I threw that in. I mean, and now that I know is in no other book, and I can't prove it, and I can't document it. It's just here it is. You know, believe it, don't believe it.
Well, your other
thing I wanted to do is I wanted to let people, you know, in reading the book, pick out what they really wanted to see. And maybe they're not interested in this, this, this. They are interested in this, this, this. And again, if you want to find out more about it, I try to steer them in the right direction to learn more about it.
Yeah, you're really doing that.
Spend pages and pages.
Yeah, I totally get that. And you also, you know, you also follow your own interests. I mean, it's so obvious to me that you are much more interested in the lives and legends of two fellows named Accardo and Giancana than you are in going over the old well-trod Capone stuff. And you have Sam Giancana's last meal.
Right.
And yeah, you call it Dine Like a Mafioso.
I wrote about Sam Giancana, and then I just happened to know that at the time somebody took him out in his basement in Oak Park, he was preparing an Italian meal.
Sure.
And then I thought, well, I'm just going to throw in the recipe. I don't think many guidebooks have recipes.
No, it's a friendly guidebook. It is literally like, to me, you're the kind of guy who would be fun to sit next to on a couple stools at a tavern. I mean, it's a kind of, I think every tavern in Chicago, the shrinking number of taverns, should literally have this book. You've got, you know, Jack Ruby's gravesite, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, I had no idea Jack Ruby.
Yeah.
You could just go see his grave.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, what I find now is I age so badly is that so few are the younger generation. I mean, they really lost touch with a lot of history.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's people out there
who are saying,
know, maybe the name sounds familiar,
yeah,
but
that,
to me, it's jaw dropping.
Yeah, see, I just find that sad. Hey, Studs Terkel used to say that this country suffers from a collective Alzheimer's, where all we're interested in is what the new thing is. You live in the suburbs now. You've been married for a good long time to your wife, and your kids are they both photographers? Your son Joe has his photographs pepper the book. Tell me about them.
Joe's a photographer in Chicago. My daughter is a very, very successful. She worked for Oprah Winfrey for a while.
Oh, wow.
She works with Second City.
Huh.
And I don't know where she got her talent. I think she inherited them from her mother.
Yeah.
But she's one of those kids who you could drop it in the Mojave Desert and she would find a way to make a good living.
Well, I have the same feeling about you. You obviously, do you still teach?
No, they farmed me out a while back.
Well, it'd be hard. Now, you would be an interesting remote learning teacher, I'll tell you that. But you obviously enjoyed teaching, didn't you?
I did enjoy teaching. And, you know, it's one of the few things, well, it is the only thing I've ever done, where if you suddenly drop dead, that somebody would notice. You know, a lot of jobs I've had, you know, 2 days later, nobody even remembers you were there. So I still get kids who mysteriously have managed to get older than I am, you know, contact me, and especially with the book.
Yeah.
And they still remember me, and they say, hey, I remember you telling us those stories.
Oh, how cool.
So it makes you feel all warm and fuzzy.
Yeah. It must be hard to publish in the midst of this, you know, coronavirus
clampdown. It's a very funny thing.
Yeah.
I was convinced I was going to have a really hard time. But luckily, Black Lion Publishing picked it up. And then, you know, with the COVID and everything, in some ways, it just almost worked to my advantage. Because I think right now, people are just looking for some kind of diversion under these weird circumstances. And with the book, you could, like, design your own custom tour.
No question.
Go to a bunch of places that are really off the beaten path and never have to get out of the car.
Yeah, it's also, you know, the other great thing about this book that I found, you don't even have to get out of your chair. This is great.
Thank you.
No, I mean it. This is like great armchair traveling. And I think one of the reasons is that you're very distinctive. You come through the pages of this book. There's no question about that to me. You know, Bruce Dern's A Boyhood Home. Who knew? Who knew?
Who knew?
Who knew? Who knew?
I loved going to, like, Charlton Heston's home is still there growing
yeah,
up. And,
yeah.
And I don't know what it is, but I just got a kick out of walking through Charlton Heston's neighborhood and seeing what he saw every day when he would get up and go to school. That, to me, like, you get to see what Moses saw every day, right? So it really appealed to me. The trick is always, are other people going to find that as appealing, or are they going to think it's not worth it? But you don't know unless you try.
Jerry Lucas, you have written as I said, there are hundreds of Chicago guidebooks. Yours is among the most distinctive I have ever come across, and it was a true pleasure to read. You can read more about it in Tuesday's Tribune. And Jerry, I'd love to, we'll get together one of these days when people resurrect that old thing of getting together.
As soon as there's a bar stool available, I'm in.
All right, pal. Thank you so much. It's really,
thank you very much for having me on.
Hey, it's a terrific book. It's a terrific, terrific, distinctive book. And I, who fashion myself something of a Chicago historian, I learned a lot. Reading about Laurie Dann and Patty Colombo, one of the most interesting people in the history of this town. She still gives me the creeps. Jerry, take care of yourself and best to your family.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. My real pleasure. Take care. Again, the book is Where the Tour Buses Don't Go. The author is Jerry Lekas, L-E-K-A-S. And you can read about him in you can read about him online tomorrow because the Tribune goes online before it goes in print, and in print on Tuesday. We'll be back in a few minutes.